Welcome to another episode of Why Your Story Podcast. I'm Travis Osmond.
I'm Mary Jo Parker.
And together we are
Why Your Story.
The crowd goes crazy.
They clap. We bring down the house.
We're so glad to be here with everyone again. We've taken kind of a little bit of a break.
We have. We have. And sometimes these don't air right away, and so I'll be talking about snow, and it's sunny, and yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think we're going to air this one pretty quick, aren't we?
Okay, I would think so. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just do a little fade out here. It's more professional.
Because we are professionals.
We are professional. Oh, I love it.
Me too.
How you doing?
Good. I just got back from a trip, and then I got to experience that COVID.
COVID. Yeah. I wanted to say that everybody that MJ got COVID.
Yeah. After. But
I didn't
want to
say
years.
It. I said it after you because I didn't want to do the whole HIPAA thing.
Yeah.
Because is that HIPAA? If I say tell everyone you have COVID when you're not on the radio with me.
Yes.
MJ had COVID.
Have you had it?
No.
Wow.
I don't even think there is COVID.
Okay. Yeah.
But I've had two shots and I think maybe two boosters.
Oh, I just
have
had
I had two?
Three.
No, I've had three. I've had two shots and a booster.
When was your booster?
A long time ago.
Oh. I really think I got it at Newark because I watched them clean the plane and they were in and out so fast. It's not like when it first happened and they were really like thoroughly cleaning. So I think that's where I got it.
Oh, really?
Because I had to take a test to come back to the U.S. and it was negative. And then all of a sudden it was positive.
Uh-oh.
But it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't?
Mm-mm.
It really wasn't that bad?
It was.
Because when I talked to you on the phone, it sounded horrible.
Yeah. But Steve had it really bad.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like when we went deep sea fishing. And oh, did I tell you I got two squid?
You caught two squids?
Yeah. With the old, not the little the rod. No, this big old round thing and the wires, and I had to wear these bandages on my fingers.
You were netting them?
No. We hooked. Had this big old hook and like a fake rock.
Yeah.
And caught them.
And with a fake rock.
Yeah.
And no a big kidding.
Lure. Yeah.
So you caught these with a big round thing and a fake rock.
And then poor Steve, I looked over and he was just a chumming away. Yeah, he didn't do well.
Really?
But the girls, we did really good.
Pretty cool. Have you noticed that there's been music playing this whole time you've been talking to me?
There's music in my ears. Yes.
I've had this thing for Ozzy Osbourne all day today.
Why?
I have no idea. I honestly don't know.
Well,
sick dudes eating bats. It's kind of how I feel about life in the summertime.
Yeah, because I'm a tad busy.
I'm a zombie.
Mm.
I don't know. I've had this song on my mind all day today, so I thought I'd share it with the listeners because I'm sure everybody in Star Valley is an Ozzy Osbourne fan.
Oh, I bet everybody.
I'm sure 99.9.
Yeah.
Because listen, I've been a bad boy. Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad that you're back from the dead, to be honest with you. Because remember when I talked to you, you sounded like you were dead. And then I did the whole, bring out your dead. What show is that?
I don't know.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, boy.
Did
you know it? That's what it was? Oh,
don't
wow.
Ask our guest before we introduce
okay.
him.
Okay. I shan't.
How are they going to know who you're talking to?
Because they know me and know that I
talk and then
I squirrel.
Oh, I love it. Well, no, it is. It's a beautiful time to be in Star Valley. This is why we live here. These 4 weeks of summer that we have are just fantastic.
Yes. Not so much for Yellowstone visitors, though.
Can you believe the water they're getting?
That's crazy. It's crazy.
That house that fell in.
The housing for
for the employees.
Yeah. And all those jobs, lack of now.
Could you imagine if we were getting some of that water, though? I mean, we need it bad.
Yeah.
Flaming Gorge is low.
Lake Powell is.
Oh, Lake Powell's a puddle.
Yeah.
It's a mud
sad.
Puddle.
Yeah.
It's never going to fill.
Mm-mm. No. But at least we've had some rain the last few days.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
So I keep covering up my plants that I planted. It's annoying.
We've had two tomatoes.
Wow.
Yep. Two red tomatoes already.
That's in the greenhouse. Awesome. In the greenhouse.
Yeah.
Cool. What else do you put in there?
Just tomatoes.
Okay.
Megan likes to do the bottling and the salsa the soup and the tomato paste and the tomato.
I can tell you really like
it. Oh, my gosh. Every meal we have in the winter is tomato. I mean, I'm okay with a little red now and again, but everything. And I'm not complaining at all because she's a really good cook. It just seems like we put up lots and lots of tomatoes.
Yeah, we do too.
But she lets me hunt all the time, so that's a good trade-off.
That's a good balance.
Yep. Well, we have a guest in-house today.
We sure do.
And his name is... Go ahead.
Yeah, say it, because we're going to mess it up.
No. The full name. We want the full name. And when you have to understand one thing, when you come in here, you're at the mercy of MJ and I, right? So we go places with people that sometimes we wouldn't otherwise go.
Well, you know, I've been hiding from the government for in plain sight, right? So that's why, you know, not many people know my name. They know me as Bud, right?
Right.
Yeah, so.
But your real name is?
It is Gustav.
Gustav.
So tell me about the name.
Well, my father, actually my grandparents, were right out of the Führerland, representing the Deutschland, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And came to upstate New York just prior to World War II. Yeah. And my father was just, you know, a teenager-ish. That era, and by the time World War II came around, so he, you know, wasn't in Germany. Otherwise, that would have been a completely... And they left Germany right after World War I, prior to World War II. So that could have been a completely... I speak very... Like, I took German in high school, and I forgot it all. I speak Spanish, but not German. So that's kind of strange, right?
It is very strange.
Spanish with a German accent, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So, But yeah, that's kind of where it came from. And my last name was not Clark.
Oh.
So my father changed it. And
what was it?
Schuchart. S-C-H-U-C-H-A-R-D-T.
Gustav Schuchart.
Wow.
Really?
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. And that, so I got moved from the back of the classroom to the front of the classroom with the Clark.
Ah.
So not related to any Clarks in Star Valley.
Shoe Clark.
Yep. So S-C-H-U-C-H-A-R-D-T.
Schuchart.
And so my middle name is Hart. And that's where they got the middle name from. Because they took Hart out of that last name.
Oh, that makes sense.
So what did your dad call you?
I was Little Bud. Because my dad went by Bud.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and then, so I was Little Bud.
That's nice.
I had an Uncle Bud. One of my favorite uncles. His name was Bud.
What did your dad call you, MJ?
I don't know, because he was never around.
Wasn't he?
No.
Never around to call you anything?
No.
Really?
Mm-mm.
That's interesting. Well. That should be a topic for another... things that dads call their kids.
Oh,
I think that would be a good one for...
Yeah, and when they have... they mix all the names together... You know, so like...
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine, and he thought his name was Jesus Christ.
Oh.
Because his dad would come in...
Oh, no. Wow.
What the heck happened to this room?
Yep, exactly. And he's like...
Yeah.
For a part of his life, I thought my name was Jesus Christ.
Wow. That's funny.
I got Cassidy and Clancy, and I always come in and I say... Clancity! I get mad.
And then it just...
But I don't ever get mad.
Never.
No.
You're just a little quiet. Yep.
So in this week in dealing with hospital topics that we tend to get back around to, Bud is the director of EMS.
He is.
Emergency Medical Services for Star Valley Health. So Bud... Why?
Well,
why on earth?
Yes.
So,
inquiring minds want to know.
Yes, I mean, honestly, In all seriousness, sometimes I do ask myself why. but why did I do this? But ultimately, you know, I had one main goal, and was to make sure that Star Valley and the 13 communities that make up Star Valley, right, have good emergency medical services provided to them. You know, in Wyoming, we have a very interesting perspective on emergency medical services, and that is that, you know, EMS is not a it's not an essential service. So there are federal or tax dollars that go towards law enforcement and go towards fire, right?
Right.
Fire has a fire district, but there is no EMS district, and there are no money state or local monies that really go towards funding it.
I don't understand it at all.
And so, therefore, it's been a volunteer service for a long time, but when we have the population boom that we've got going on in this valley, it's just not really reasonable that we're going to be able to maintain on a volunteer basis, right?
That's right.
So we really need to move to this professional service that is a full-time valley-wide organization, and that's where we are right now. You know, between several people that were instrumental in getting this done, and that would be, you know, folks in Alpine, that what was Alpine EMS and the town of Alpine, and folks that was that were Thane EMS and the town of Thane, the town of Star Valley Ranch, the CEO of Star Valley Health, Dan Ordina, and you know, and you know, all my staff at Star Valley EMS, you know, that's those are the people to thank for merging EMS valley-wide. And so now all three stations manned 24/7, 365 by a paramedic and an EMT.
That's awesome.
And that is a way different model than where we were.
So give us an idea of what Star Valley looked like a year ago, well, a year and a half ago versus now when someone called the 911. Let's just say a 911 call went out in Bedford. What would that look like?
Well, ultimately what it looked like is somebody, if Thane was in service on those days, because back then there was a, when I first took over, it was September of 2020. And so as the director, and then we eventually I met the folks throughout the valley, and Thane had a real problem with, they were a volunteer service completely, and they just didn't have the staffing to staff their ambulance. And so if they were on that day, then what would happen is somebody would use the pager, respond to that call. They'd go down, get the ambulance out of the garage, and that might take 10 to 15 minutes depending on where they lived in proximity to the EMS garage. Then they get the ambulance out, and then they drive to your call, which could take another 15 minutes or so.
True.
So now you're talking 30 minutes to get to, if depending on what level of call we have.
Right.
You know, if you're having a cardiac arrest, that's a long time, even if somebody in your family knows how to do CPR, to wait for a rig. And so that is, and then at times, you know, for through the last year, probably 70 to 80% of the calls in Thane were being covered by Afton. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that, you know, to go into that on the backside story of like, what's it take to do that? Well, I didn't have the financial ability within our service to stand up somebody to go work full time down in Thane.
True.
And so, and with that, the best we could do was cover from Afton. So, you know, and I think the both of you understand that full time, you know, running code 3 from Afton to Thane is at minimum 20 minutes, right?
Yes. Right.
Yep,
at our
right.
top speed. And so 20 minutes down there. And by the time we get there, then maybe, and you know, heaven forbid the calls in Bedford. Well, then that's even another 10 minutes added on to that, maybe.
Right.
So that becomes the problem, and it's all about time and getting people, you know, an EMT of whatever level, whether it be a basic or all the way up to the paramedic level, but getting somebody there to, you know, recognize what's going wrong and start treatment.
What is the appropriate time to respond to a call, and what are we at now?
Well, right now, the average response time for us in regards to 911 calls is 2 minutes or below.
Wow.
And that has to deal with, you know, at nighttime, they're sound asleep. Mm-hmm. So they have to get up, get dressed, get out to the rig, and go, right?
Right.
And so, and we've done things like, you know, in this, now it's, right now it's the summertime, reportedly. You know, like you were talking about your plants, right?
Right.
My froze tomato plants the other night. It's weird again, because I don't have a greenhouse. But so with that, reportedly summertime, but we're parking the ambulances now right at the quarters. And so
nice.
Here in Star Valley, we don't have what we would, you know, what would be optimum for an EMS station, right?
Right.
So that would be, you know, a kitchen, a crew room, offices, a training room, you know, showers, locker room type thing, and sleeping rooms, and then the garage all attached in one building. That yes. would be optimum, right?
Right.
Because then they're living, they're doing their things, and when the call goes off, they just either run down the stairs or run to the other side of the building, jump in the rig, and off they go. Well, we are, you know, we've got a big, it used to be a Canyon Realty, so we leased the log home next to the Forest Service, and that's our Afton quarters. And then in Thane, we're there just up the street from Maverick with our quarters on Elgin.
Nice.
And then we're up above the Adventure Rentals in Alpine. So, you know, Dave Walters, we're renting from him up above there. So, and then we keep the ambulances, you know, in Alpine in the fire department, and in Thane, we keep them in the city garage there where Thane EMS operated out of. And then up here, we still have our garage next, you know, between, Salt River Grill and Tractor Supply across from Red Baron. And so, but ultimately, how do we, you know, it's just way different. So those response right. times now are just, and every time I've talked to somebody about, you know, somebody called me and wanted to know, hey, can we have the ambulance come out and stand by at our Bible day camp, our vacation Bible school? and so I was like, okay. I said, well, what kind of activities are you doing? You know, I'm thinking there's some high risk activities going on. And I said, what kind of high risk activities are you doing? She goes, because I explained to her that, hey, we now have full-time crews, because she knew that it used to take, she goes, it'd take 45 minutes if I call for an ambulance. And we got a bunch of kids here and I'm worried about
right.
that. And I explained to her, well, no, we have a crew and they're either in Thane or in Alpine, depending on where the construction is, but we're going to send one of them and they'll be there within 5 to 10 minutes max.
Awesome.
And she's like, oh, and she goes, well, I guess the most dangerous thing we'd be doing is sack races. And I said, I think you'll be okay.
Unless it's somebody my age. And then.
Yeah. MJ and I would have dislocated femurs.
Yeah. Broken hip.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's, again, not what the Valley knows.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it is, time is important.
Mm-hmm.
And explain a few instances why time is important.
Well, I mean, ultimately, let's face it, if you're in cardiac arrest, you know, if you don't get oxygenated blood to your brain, you know, 4 minutes-ish, and you start having brain death occur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we can prolong that with good CPR. So it's important to know how to do CPR. And you can just do the compressions. The breathing isn't that important. The compressions, continuous compressions, are the most important. And you know, We know that, right? Because use something, a device called the Lucas, because we know that people get tired doing CPR.
Mm-hmm.
And so we use our Lucas device, which is a hydraulic piston that compresses the chest, and it's designed for that. And because that thing it never gets tired.
No.
Does the best compressions. And so compressions are important in that time element, getting you know, or it's also time to shock. So we talk about time to shock. You know, we get there, we put on quick look pads, and we decide, do we need to shock this patient? Because if the heart is in certain rhythms, like ventricular fibrillation, then what we call pulseless VTAC, we shock that heart with electrical source. It's kind of like a big taser, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except it's a lot more, like 100 times more energy than the taser, right? So, so we shock, and then we hope that the heart restarts in a rhythmic format. That's what we're looking for.
Right.
And so that's important. So time to shock. And then we talk about time to epi. you know, so time to drug. And so when we get on scene, we quickly establish intravenous access through one means or another. And then we're going to get epinephrine into the body.
Yep.
And we're going to, and that is going to help us get what we call ROSC. So return of spontaneous circulation.
Exactly.
And so, and those times are important. So our goal at EMS is to try to get within the major areas of communities in our valley, we want to try to get an ambulance there within 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tracking these response times. And then the other thing we're tracking is where our call volumes are. Because right now, we just, you know, we took over two other, we absorbed, not took over, but we absorbed two other stations in, or two other entities into us.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were the paramedic entity. Plus, on top of that, we're also licensed in Idaho, which was really important, right? Because we're not like the fire department at all. We can't just go over and do mutual aid into Idaho. We actually have to have a medical licensure. And so Dr. Aaron Brown, our medical director, he had to get his licensure in Idaho as a doctor. Otherwise, our treatment guidelines weren't valid over there.
Mm.
And then we had to get licensed as an entity because otherwise any of our EMTs, their license would not be valid over there in Idaho. So we would really be practicing medicine without a license. When Dr. Brown and I looked at the law, it said 5 years in prison and up to $500,000 in fines.
Oh.
And it named the medical director and the director of the service, which is me and him. And I said, I'm not doing a 2.5 year vacation over there. I mean, this isn't happening, right? So we needed to fix that.
Mm.
And we have. So now we're licensed in both states.
Good.
You know, we're a border entity.
So I think when it comes to calling 911, everybody always thinks the heart attack, you know. But one thing that I have learned that's really time sensitive is stroke. And we have a huge population in Star Valley that are prone to that type of a condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got, the magic 1 hour?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, they need intervention. And
quickly.
So being able to get to scene within 10 minutes is huge.
Yes.
Because you have somebody there that can start interventions and then start making the calls to get things happening for this patient.
That's right.
And get them to the CT or get them in the air or whatever needs to happen at that point to save a life.
And you mentioned, and so what do we do? It's that important that we bypass the ER and we go directly into CT and we start and we get a CT on them to determine where is the clot and what type of clot it is or what type of stroke it is. Is it ischemic stroke where there's a clot or is it hemorrhagic? Right. And then that determines our treatment from there on in the ER.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so but it is a time sensitive emergency.
So in that, Bud, when you just said ischemic or hemorrhagic, explain that just so our listeners know what that means.
Yes.
In your brain, what happens in a stroke?
So depending on the circumstance, but if it's ischemic stroke, then that usually involves a clot in a major vessel that's supplying oxygenated blood to the brain. When that clot happens, then there is no oxygenated blood getting past that to the brain tissue, and you are experiencing brain death ultimately, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways we fix that is by we use a clot buster. And so we have different medications that we can give you and things like streptokinase or TNK, all these different meds, and they basically go in and break up that clot and allow blood to flow back to that area. So that is one option. And we do that through telestroke or, you know, telemedicine within the ER.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so we can do that. And then in addition to that, now a hemorrhagic stroke, that's different. And what that is that basically you have had a vessel in your head break. And then it begins bleeding.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a harder thing to recover from because as pressure builds up inside the head, the skull doesn't allow for expansion, right?
Yep.
If you have bleeding in an arm, it'll swell up or whatever if it's internal.
Sure.
But you can't, there's no swelling. So what it does is it compresses the brain and it compresses it back down into the brainstem. And so, and that's then they're herniating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we use different meds to try to prevent that herniation, but it's not as successful as we would like it to be. It's a much more difficult management than it is if you're having the occlusive or ischemic stroke.
Right.
Yeah.
So one thing that I can say, having been involved in this process, is I'm gonna illustrate with a story. So a couple weeks ago, we had a very tragic rollover in the Narrows, and we had five occupants in a vehicle that rolled. Okay, so potentially five very potentially deadly individuals. And so we dispatched, they dispatched Thane, they dispatched Afton, we put Alpine on standby, and we all started rolling to the scene. Normally, working with another agency, it becomes very difficult with communication. It becomes very difficult because we don't know what's on their ambulance, we don't know what they're capable of. But in this case, we had three ambulances, and we all knew each other. And we're all trained to the same level. We're all trained. We know what's happening. We know what the protocols are. Triage happened very quickly, and all five were okay. And all five got really good care. And I think that, in my mind, that's the difference.
I agree.
You have a unified EMS group throughout the entire valley that all are trained the same. We all... Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about trained to do IVs. I'm not talking about trained to give meds. We're trained protocol. So A, B, C, D, E, F, G happens very fast.
Right.
And very quick order. And there's no miscommunications.
Right. What and all think, of the MJ? Rigs are the same, you know?
Yeah.
They're all stocked
if
the same.
If I need an IV, I know right where to go to get an IV. It doesn't matter if I'm in Alpine or if I'm in Afton. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Or if I need normal saline or a SAM splint.
Sure.
They're all in the same spot.
Right. And we'll all get there and be on the same page. And that's so important, especially
And you have the same equipment.
Yes.
Okay. And so that's another
thing,
right? I mean, not having a different ventilator or you know, knowing what ventilators we have or knowing what cardiac monitors we have.
Sure.
Or knowing what type of intubation equipment you have. All of that. So, I mean, there's so much, even down to the, like you said, the SAM splint.
Yeah.
You bet.
Or as simple as a stair chair.
Yeah.
I went on a call one time and they pulled out a stair chair. I had never even seen it before.
Right.
And there was like so many levers I had. I felt like an idiot.
Right.
You know? Right. And so, but things like that are important when you're dealing with a magical hour.
Mm-hmm.
It, those 5 minutes of me fumbling around with a stair chair mean something.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I take that as something that, you know, I think members of the community, those that have benefited from calling 911, those that, heaven forbid, have to call 911, are going to be greatly impressed and thankful to have that.
Yep. That's true. I was just going to say, so in your career throughout your life, will you just tell us a basic kind of how you started out? I mean... Little bud, how'd you go?
I still don't know if your dad called you little bud.
Yeah. Well, and in full disclosure, my dad left. My parents got divorced when I was young, and he was out of my life, and I found him again when I was older. So it was really my mom who raised me.
Okay.
And you know, and I grew up in a single parent household, and she worked hard, and I really have everything to thank. You know. I really thank her for that, for everything that where I'm at today. And so she always, the one thing she gave me is that, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can do it. And she put that in my head from when I was a little kid. And so really everything I've wanted to do, I've done. In essence. And so I started as a volunteer firefighter in Pennsylvania outside of the far western suburbs, Malvern, PA. And I get on when the fire whistle will go off, and that's why it's so nostalgic here for me. Because when the fire whistle would go off, I'd get on my 10-speed, and I'd be riding down, and I put on my turnouts, and I jumped on a tailboard of a fire engine and rode to the fire. And that was back when we rode tailboard still. And then, you know, in high school, I got the privilege to go to a lot of training, you know, fire academy.
Wow.
And then, you know, as long as I had a 3.0 grade average or above, we carried pagers, a little bit bigger than the one we have now, but we carried these pagers and I could leave school and go on a call. And we had lights. I had blue lights on the top of my car and we would go I mean, so, I mean, I see a little bit of our fire department here, this volunteer fire mm-hmm. department we have, and it was participant in that, wow. right? And so you'd go, you know, all these firemen screaming down the road and get to the fire, and you'd have trucks parked everywhere, except that we went right to the station usually.
Okay.
We didn't usually go to the fire. Some of us went to the fire. If you had lights on your vehicle, but mostly we went to the station. And mm-hmm. so anyhow, but I rode the tailboard and I was a firefighter. Fine. And then I became an EMT.
Okay.
All right. And then eventually after becoming an EMT, then I became an IEMT, and then and I finally, after the Marine Corps, I landed in Yuma, Arizona as my last duty station.
Hmm.
And I was working for Rural Metro, which is a for-profit company, right?
Okay.
And I went to a barn fire, and I was waiting for this guy's credit card to clear. And my chief was telling me I can't put this fire out until his credit card cleared, because he wasn't one of our subscribers.
And that is amazing. Gotta
be kidding me.
No, what? I'm not. And I just said, I am done with this place.
Yeah.
I can't do this. This is not me.
Wow.
And so I quit Rural Metro, and somebody talked to me and said, hey, why don't you come be a reserve sheriff's deputy? We'll put you through the Reserve Academy.
Okay.
And so I went through the Reserve Academy for Yuma County Sheriff's Office and ended up as a sheriff's deputy. My last 5 months in the Marine Corps, I never put on a Marine Corps uniform.
Holy cow.
My boss knew that I was volunteering as a sheriff's deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Yuma was in the budget crisis. The county was in the budget crisis of all crises. And so my boss, the captain over the AIMD, which is the Aircraft Intermediate Maintenance Department. I was working on aircraft at that time as an aviation electrician. He tells me, he says, I don't want you to come to work. He goes, I want you to report to Captain Walker or Sheriff Phipps, and you're going to work your 40 hours there for them.
Oh, goodness. That's awesome.
And so I worked as a sheriff's deputy my last 6 months. I barely even worked in the Marine Corps.
Wow.
But I worked the road as a patrol deputy, and sometimes I was the only deputy on.
Holy cow.
But again, and I was a reserve, so I wasn't being paid by the county. They weren't paying me. They didn't have any money to pay me. They were in a budget crisis, right?
Goodness.
So I volunteered and went and took accidents. I went to family fight calls. I had Border Patrol backing me up. And I was this white kid from Pennsylvania. I went to an armed robbery in San Luis, which is right on the border in Yuma County. Right on the other side is Nogales, right?
Hmm.
Or Somerton. And so Somerton's right on the other side of the border. And everybody around there is speaking Spanish. And I'm like, I can't get a description of the guy that robbed the place because I didn't speak Spanish. So I had to learn Spanish.
Okay.
And that's what forced me to do. I couldn't even, like, I didn't know my colors. I couldn't, you know, it was crazy. And so Yuma County deputy. And then I saw the Arizona Department of Public Safety, the state police in Arizona. They flew into our hospital there. In Yuma, and landed with their Bell helicopter. And this guy got out. He's wearing a gun and a flight suit, but it says paramedic on his sleeve.
Hmm.
And I'm like, so I got to talk to this guy. I'm like, so what? You're a state policeman and a paramedic? And he's like, yeah, I am. We picked this guy up at that wreck out there on I-8. And I'm like, oh, I got to do this.
How fun.
And so I applied to California Highway Patrol and Arizona DPS simultaneously. I got job offers from both. Both of them had an air rescue operation, and I chose Arizona. And I was a trooper for about, rural area trooper for about 3 years, 4 years, went and rode motors for a year and a half, and then they sent me to paramedic school.
So have you ever been to Bud's office in his home?
Yes.
So
yes,
have you seen the cool picture of him, the sniper picture?
I don't think I have.
Oh my gosh! It's because I just love sniper movies, and I don't know what I don't even.
Well,
I don't
doesn't
even
love
hunt.
Sniper movies.
I know, right? Anyway, I'm like, is that you? And yeah, so you were also that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great career at DPS, and they prepared me for this second career now. But they sent me to paramedic school, and I spent 8 years flying in air rescue doing. You know, search and rescue, technical rescue, so rappel and short haul off the. We were flying Bell 206 L3s, long rangers at that time. And, you know, and they taught me how to fly the helicopter because, we did law enforcement and people shot at us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, hey, you bring this helicopter back in one piece. You know, we can get a new you. So if your pilot gets shot, you fly back to your land.
Wow.
That was important. So
that
they called it the pitch hitter program. And so I learned how to hover the helicopter. And once you can hover it, you can fly it.
It's, wow.
Yeah. So I did that for about 8 years. And then I decided I wanted to go to SWAT. And I went over to SWAT. And I spent another 7 years on SWAT. And I did probably every job at SWAT. I mean, yes, I kept my paramedic status valid. So I was sometimes a paramedic. And if you're the paramedic, you're sitting out in the delivery vehicle. You're not running in, you know, doing entries. Yeah. But there was other times where other paramedics were available. We'd use our air rescue paramedics, and then I'd be on the entry team, you know, or they sent me through a precision rifle course. So I spent a lot of time behind a gun. And it was just a different life back then.
Yeah.
It was really different.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that's neat.
But
well,
my goal is EMS, merging these entities and providing fantastic service to this valley. And I want to get it into perpetuity. So right now we have funding challenges, and about 33% of our calls we get zero money for. And so right now that money comes from other places in the hospital. The hospital is paying for the EMS services in this valley. Mm-hmm. And becoming an essential service, right now the governor's office has a task force, and they're out doing listening sessions. I've offered to help over in Cheyenne with some regulatory change and things like that. But we've got some true challenges in the next year to address with EMS statewide. And that's really my goal, is before I leave, you know, before I retire for a second time, I want to provide a option that is going to take us into perpetuity with EMS services. I don't want it so that you dial 911 and nobody comes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That would be terrible. I'm grateful you have come here with your experience and knowledge, and, you know, you're pushing to make it right. And these folks here that live way out, that they have some hope. I think that's really important.
It is. It is important. And we're grateful to have Bud here with us. We're thankful for all the EMS services out there and all the all the paramedics. Bud, how does somebody get involved?
So we run EMT classes. We also occasionally enlist people that drive for us. But if they give us a call and leave a voicemail, 307-885-5879 is our main number to EMS. And they can reach out that way. And our next we're running a basic EMT class right now. And our next one will be the following year. We'll run another basic EMT class. Nice. There's some limitations. You know, we can have EMTs, but to drive the ambulances right now because of insurance issues, you got to be 21.
Yep.
So, but ultimately, if you're 21 or over and you want to drive for us, that could be an option. And we need we have full-time staff, but I would tell you that, you know, you are one of our part-time staff members, you know, and without you, I mean, and without the both of you, both Mary Jo and Travis are fantastic EMTs. They're both at the eye level, which is they have 30 meds that they're responsible for, and they have cardiology module that they do. And the IMT is a fantastic level to have here in Wyoming. It really gives a lot to us. And matter of fact, to the point that when we joined Idaho and got our EMS license over there, the first thing the office in Boise started asking me about is championing an IMT program in the state of Idaho. They wish they had.
Good deal. Yes.
So we got a lot of specialty things going on here in the state that are good.
Good.
That's
good,
right.
Deal. Well, Bud, we appreciate you being on with us today.
Yeah, we're going to, well, because time's so short, we will have you again.
Okay.
And we'll have Carla come with you next time.
Okay.
And she's a local that you married.
I did. Yep. And my wife's from this valley. I could throw a rock and hit one of her relatives.
Oh. Okay.
I actually am one of her relatives.
Are you?
I am.
Yes, he is.
Oh,
yes.
Boy.
So this is, I'm actually talking to the family member right
now. I am a relative.
Yes.
Yep. Well, we're grateful, Bud, to have you here. We're thankful all of Star Valley EMS.
We're grateful for Star Valley Health.
We are. They're one of our main sponsors for their podcast. So we are grateful for them. Without them, we couldn't keep doing what we're doing. So
that's right.
And without EMS, a lot of people couldn't keep doing what they're doing. So how's that?
Yeah. Well, thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, this is the Why Your Story podcast. I am your host, Travis Osmond.
I am your host, Mary Jo Parker.
and we'll catch you later. Thanks so much.
That's right. Thanks again, Bud, for coming in.
You bet. Thanks.